Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, June 28th. I'm Ray Graff. Time once again for our monthly bird program. The bird program is inexplicably one of our most popular shows. We welcome... Why are you looking at me that way, Rich Guthrie?
Inexplicably.
Well, it's very popular. I can't figure it out. We welcome the regionally famous Rich Guthrie to answer all your birding questions. The number is 800-348-2551. He's well known. 800-348-2551. You may also email the program voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. Birds today. Your calls, your bird calls, are coming up right after the news. Hello and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today on the program, and we welcome back Rich Guthrie to do just that. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Our number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email your questions or comments to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thank you. Great to be here again.
So you just told me you're going to Idaho for the eclipse in August.
I'm going to watch the lights go out in midday.
Oh, that is so cool. Now, on your way, you'll be driving, I assume.
I'm driving, tent in the back, camping along the way.
So on the way, you'll be seeing some birds you don't see around here.
Oh, absolutely.
Like what?
Oh, the prairie species. I'll be going through the prairie states. And there's a whole a bunch of different birds that are that just like tall grass, short grass, and no woods. And I'll be going out there, taking that up and I've done it before. I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Bringing your camera, I hope.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, and then fingers crossed. Yeah.
And then once you get to Idaho, what can you expect to see? What's the most exotic bird you can see in Idaho?
One of my favorites is the mountain bluebird.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, the gorgeous colors of the mountain bluebird. It's fairly common. It's like our bluebird, the eastern bluebird, but it has this wonderful azure blue plumage on it, and it's just, against the blue sky of the Rocky Mountains, bingo.
And I am told, and I have not ever seen, I don't believe I've ever seen a full solar eclipse, but Bob Berman always says,
I know,
the birds and the animals just go dead silent.
I'll take notes.
Oh, this will be your first one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I hope you have a sunny day. It's a long way to drive.
That's why I'm going out there. I mean, the eclipse is going to be starting on the southeast coast down in South Carolina.
And that'll be guaranteed to have some cloudy weather in the afternoon.
Yeah, more than likely.
Yeah.
And so right on through Tennessee and Missouri and Nebraska. And I've contacted people out there to see, hey, you got room for me? And I found out I have relatives in Idaho, and they say, yeah, you all come on down.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know they talked that way in Idaho. That's
well, she does. She's from Virginia.
I gotcha. Rich Guthrie is our guest. The lines are already loading up. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Mike in the lower Adirondacks. Mike, you're first.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Richard.
Hey.
I'm down here in Schenectady today, a far cry from where I usually am. But my question is about loons. There's a pond that I fish on that I will not name.
Okay.
And there's these two great loons. They come right up to my boat when I'm out there paddling around. They seem to have no fear of me at all. I guess what I'm asking is, how territorial are they? Are they usually like this, or is this just because they're used to fishermen on the pond? And one is nesting, so the female is always on her nest, or has been for a few weeks. When are the eggs going to hatch?
Well, they ought to be hatching any day now. I'm surprised they haven't yet. I've actually have seen loons with their chicks out on some of the Adirondack lakes already. So they should be out.
Good.
Now, about the territoriality of the loons, it really does depend on you and the pond and what you're doing and what they're doing. Sometimes they can be very easily disturbed, which is not good. Especially if the loon is sitting on eggs at the nest, because.
Yeah.
But It sounds, and birds in general, water birds in general, don't have a big fear of somebody in a boat. They're more concerned about you if you're standing on the shore or walking. But if you're in a boat or kayak or canoe, you know, moving around gently, not threatening fashion, they tend to allow closer approach. You know, it's just not a connection they seem to make between you, a floating object in the water, versus a threat.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I snuck right up on him accidentally. I wasn't even paying attention the first time I was out there, and this was before she had her eggs, and they were both just hanging out. And then I hit that pond probably once a week, and now she's been on the nest for a couple of weeks, and I'm actually, my wife and I are going out there tonight to see, you know, just to see if there's going to be chicks. So I'm hoping that there are. And her mate, you know, I've been on the other side of the pond, and he just, you know, looks right at me, and he's maybe 4 or 5 feet away from me and could seem to care less. And I, you know, I try to give him space, but it is really interesting. They're fascinating.
They're great.
So that was my question.
Well, thanks, Mike. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. I remember going through an animal park when I was a kid. I don't remember where it was, but I was always told, if you're in the vehicle and the animals don't see your legs, they don't make the connection.
Yeah, that's right. Cars also serve as a very useful opportunity to approach wildlife without disturbing them right off the bat.
Yeah.
And it's just a natural click in them. Now, some birds, if you're going in a car and you're approaching, let's say, a hawk in a tree or a heron in a pond, it's a good idea to keep going by slowly, to keep in motion. As soon as you stop, that alerts them, and that may cause them to spook.
Very interesting. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Birds today on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Jeremy in his car. Jeremy, you're next.
Hi. So this morning, this is perfect timing. This morning, there was a yellow finch on the window trying to fly, like, into the window, kind of gently fluttering against it. Then it would sit on the window. It went to another window. We chased it away. This went on for hours.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the heck is going on?
Well, it happens a lot. And basically what it boils down to, it is a bird trying to defend its territory against the rival bird. What it doesn't appreciate, that the rival bird is only its reflection in the window.
Right.
So it sees it sees a mirror image of itself and starts to want to fight with it. It's a never-ending battle. It's a no-win battle. It's unfortunate because they're using up a great deal of energy just boxing at this shadow.
And they can't learn. They won't learn?
They don't learn that, no. Hmm. You just have to take measures to deter them. Such as covering the portion that might cause the image, or some people I know will put soap on the outside of the window, you know, just for a little while. After a while, they will give up and go away.
Mm-hmm.
So a little soap to reduce the reflection, and in the end, you'll have a nice clean window.
Well, there you go.
I thought I'd just open up some newspapers to the inside of the window to end the reflection to see if what. That would stop it, but who knows? They may still be there when they get home.
Well, yeah, the newspapers on the inside of the window may increase the actual reflection on the glass. That's how mirrors work. A dark side on the inside creates that reflection.
Jeremy, thank you for the call. Do all birds do that?
No. And some, I'm surprised. A yellow bird, that kind of curious. It sounds like a goldfinch, and they're not prone to do that.
Hmm.
So the cardinal and the robin are the two best known for that behavior.
I remember the first time I ever saw that cardinal bashing into our kitchen window.
Yeah.
And I think my grandmother said, well, that means somebody's going to die.
Oh.
That was an old wives' tale.
It sounds like an old country tale.
Typical old German woman, always bringing it down a notch. You know what I mean?
It is kind of unfortunate because they should be out there doing the real job of getting rid of that other cardinal that's on the other side of inching into their territory.
All right, let's go back to the phones, get another one in here before the break. And Ellen in Saratoga Springs. Ellen, you're on.
Oh, yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This was Sunday, late afternoon, and I was sitting on my back porch I live right in the middle of Saratoga Springs in the town. I, from about 2 or 3 yards away, I heard a bobwhite.
Oh, wow.
No mistake about it. Mm-hmm. And I've never heard one here before, obviously never seen one here. I know them very well, so there's no mistaking about what bird it was.
Yeah, they say their name. They say their name loud and clear, bobwhite.
Right. And it went on for about half an hour. You know how they do? They call periodically.
Yes.
And then
yeah.
Stop a while, and then so about half an hour in all, with some lulls in the action. Never caught sight of it. It was up in kind of a brushy area, and I didn't want to go traipsing through people's yards. So I just wanted to know what your opinion was. Like, what was it doing in the middle of Saratoga Springs?
Well, what happens, bobwhite is a quail. It's related to the chicken, the pheasant, and the turkey. They used to be found in New York State, south of us. Their population has declined, and it's more confined to the more southern states, let's say from Virginia south. Mm-hmm. Now, but they are also a very popular project bird for sports groups or Boy Scouts or 4-H to raise a clutch of bobwhite and release them. That's probably where they came from, somebody's backyard, somebody's incubator in the basement.
And they're okay? They will live in this area?
No, they're not here for a reason. It's because this place is not suitable for bobwhites.
Okay.
It was an experiment that back in the day we used to stock bobwhites as a game bird, and it just simply just fizzled out.
Okay, Ellen, thank you for the call. We'll take a quick break here. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. 800-348-2551. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Culligan Water of the Northeast. For over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work. CulliganNortheast.com. Watercolors by Edith Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Huntsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Huntsberger.artistwebsites.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. Bed and Bowl, Huntington, Massachusetts, a home-style bed and breakfast for dogs, offering overnight boarding on a 50-acre farm, convenient to Northampton, Springfield, and the Berkshires, bedandbowl.com. In Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with Rich Guthrie and you at 800-348-2551. Rich, there are many, many events.
Oh, yes, yes. Now's the time. Beginning tomorrow morning, get up early and go up to Saratoga Battlefield.
How early?
8 o'clock.
Oh,
we're going to meet.
Forget it.
Tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock at Saratoga Battlefield parking area. You're going to meet the folks from the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club out on a Thursday morning bird walk.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And then way down the pike in August on the 27th to 28th, a chance to go from Brooklyn, New York out to the deep blue sea. Overnight trip for seabirds. I look forward to that. That's one of my favorite adventures, and I just want to make it available. It's called Paul Egick's Outgoing Sea Trips, PAULAGICS.
So it's an overnight trip on the water.
You on the water, on a boat that goes out to the Gulf Stream, and we're looking for tropical seabirds. Great fun. I love it.
That sounds like fun. Yeah.
Yeah. A couple other ones. 4th of July at the Vermont Institute of Natural Science in... It's at Queechee, Vermont.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Queechee, Vermont.
Okay.
Queechy, Vermont. Right. Bald Eagle Day at Vins, VINSWEB.org for details. That's an all-day event from 10 o'clock till 5 o'clock.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah. Eagle Day at Vermont Institute in Queechy, Vermont.
What was that again?
4th of July.
Okay.
Queechy, Vermont.
Ah, I see. Okay.
And then a couple other ones here. The Waterman Bird Club on Sunday, July 2nd, will be visiting the Cary Institute at 8 a.m. They do ask that you register in advance and go to the watermanbirdclub.org for information and to sign up for that one.
All right.
Then on the 8th of July, Saturday, the Hoffman Bird Club, our friends in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, will be going up to Pownall, Vermont, to the South Stream Wildlife Management Area. They'll be meeting at the Williamstown Library at 7 in the morning. That's at Route 7 in Williamstown, Massachusetts.
Okay. And, you know, there's something going on in Queechy, Vermont as well.
There is. And that would be the Vermont Institute of Natural Science.
Ah, yeah, yes, sir.
Bald Eagle Day, 4th of July.
Up in Queechy.
Yes.
Right.
So lots of good fun stuff.
Okay. And the email address here is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll blast through a couple of quick emails and then back to the phones we will go. This one came in via email from Mike, and the subject heading is call versus song. What is the difference between a bird song and a bird call? I have an app on my phone that lists these separately.
Yeah, they're right. And that's a very good question. That's one of my pet peeves.
Okay.
People use those terms, those words interchangeably, and they're not synonymous. The song is the realm of the male. The male sings. The females and the young birds don't sing. They call.
Huh.
Males call, too. The song is all about, it's a love song and a fighting song. It's the same song is to attract, to hold a mate, and also to repel a rival male. The call could mean anything, like I'm here, here I am, I'm hungry, how are you, or just cheap.
Yeah.
So there is a distinction between the two. The song is very elaborate, and developed in many songbirds into a beautiful series of notes. And whereas the call note usually is just a dry chip or a chirp or a squeak or squawk.
Very interesting. This one came in from Joanne in Ballston Spa. Says a couple of things. I've always noticed that cardinals, both male and female, are the last to leave my bird feeders just about every night. Just before the complete darkness arrives, no other birds around for quite some time. Is there a reason why they munch until darkness?
You know, that's that's an interesting point. And I notice the same thing, too. Many times when we're out, the last bird of the day will frequently be a cardinal. It's just the way they are. Their nature is to hang out, their dirty stay outs, and then they'll go find the appropriate roost for the night.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then Joanne also writes, our beautiful male red-breasted grosbeak and his girlfriend have been perching on our hummingbird feeder enjoying the nectar. This is something new this year. We've never seen it before and have been feeding the birds for many years. Is this normal?
No.
And that's from Joanne.
No, it's not. Grosbeaks, as the name implies, have a huge beak, and it's used for crunching open hard shell seeds. They do these birds learn by watching. They watch other birds and see what's going on, and they see a bird happily feeding away at something, they may give it a try. If they like it, works. If not, oh well. And apparently your rose-breasted grosbeaks, not only the one but also the other one, have found out that hummingbird feeders contain sweet water,
good stuff,
and good nectar and easy pickings. So other birds will do that only by learning. It's a design for the hummingbirds, but I've seen where woodpeckers, a downy woodpecker especially, or the orioles will come to a hummingbird feeder. And there's so the grosbeaks, that's unusual for sure.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. Cynthia in Plattekill. Cynthia, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a quick question about binoculars.
Okay.
What would you recommend would be the best cheap binoculars for viewing birds?
Well, you know, that's sort of like recommending a shoe. It's what fits your needs and style and also size. So generally speaking,
I'm looking for small.
Yeah, there are plenty of nice pocket size.
Like opera glasses, they used to call them.
Oh, no, not the old opera glasses.
No, the accordion that they fold
up. No, forget them.
No?
No, leave them on the shelf.
All right, fine.
But there are some wonderful pocket size, backpack size mini binoculars, compact binoculars that are out there. And the other ones are lightweight binoculars. I recommend a binocular that's 7 power, and the popular size is 7 times 35 binoculars.
And that's good.
Okay.
Those are sort
of great to know.
Good to know. And then there's 8x40s and 8x28s. There are a whole different range of different sizes. I have 10x42. I like the high power, and good expensive binoculars will permit clear viewing and lots of light. So it's really, really, you get what you pay for, but there are some really good binocular bargains out there. And if I can, I'll just give a plug for a guy in Coxsackie, New York, Miracal Optical, M-I-R-A-K-E-L. You can check him out online. They're a good local dealer. And then on the other end of the spectrum, on a wider spectrum, there's Eagle Optics out there.
Okay.
Both of those will have recommendations that you can check out. And really, it's a matter of personal choice and preference.
So the casual bird watcher, how much you can buy binoculars that are $10, you can buy binoculars that are $300 or more.
Right.
I mean, if I'm just going out to look at the birds once in a blue moon, what's the ballpark I should spend?
I would start at around $250.
$250?
Yes, sir.
Forget it. Hey, you know, question about binoculars. If you had infrared,
mm-hmm.
could you watch owls? Could you find
yes,
them?
Yes, yeah, there are such things. Night vision binoculars
yeah.
are out there. And I have a pair at home. They work. They work. You're not going to get the color or anything
right.
like that, but you know, you are going to see the image.
Okay. $250. Rich, come
right.
on.
That's only the opening.
Oh, give me a break. Let's go to Dan in Saratoga. Dan, you're on.
Hi. So I've had luck with bluebirds in my backyard throughout the winter with the help of mealworm.
Mm-hmm.
But once the snow melts and the weather gets warmer, they disappear. And I'm wondering if they just don't like me anymore, if they have better places to go eat. I keep the mealworm out all summer, and the bluebirds are not interested. But
well,
in the wintertime, they're there.
Yeah, that's surprising because I fed bluebirds mealworms during the summer. But unfortunately, and just backing up a little bit, after the snow melts, bluebirds are out there looking to nest. They want to build a nest. And so I suspect that they have a nesting place someplace other than your place. And so that they went,
yes.
they just went back home. So they were hanging out, taking
okay.
advantage of you through the winter, and then they abandoned you during the nesting season. And they become homebodies.
That's the way I feel.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
Good mealworm or no, they move on.
Right. Nothing personal.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
And thank you. And over to Kurt in Nassau. Kurt, you're on.
Hi, I got a question, another grocery question.
Okay.
Sure.
I've got a lot of feeders in the backyard. One is, I call it a frame with a wire grid on the bottom, and you hang it up and it attracts a variety of birds. The grosbeaks seem to like that, but I have noticed that I know grosbeaks love black oil sunflower,
mm-hmm.
but they'll sit there and they'll crack the seeds, and they're the only bird that I've noticed that you find the shells with the seeds. Any observations, any opinion on that?
Well, that's what they do best.
and they're doing it really well.
They do it very well, yeah. A lot of birds will, blue jays, for example, if it's a black oil sunflower seed, they'll just swallow it whole and fill up their gullet and fly away. And they may catch a few away in the snags of a tree or simply digest them. The grosbeaks and some of the other ones, the cardinals would sit there and open up shells and parrot-like fashion.
Yeah.
And the chickadees will hammer away at it until they break open the shell. And then, so
yeah, well, I noticed the chickadees, they seem to fly away with the seeds.
They will do that. They oftentimes will fly away with it. If they're really anxious and there's no threat around, they'll take one or two before they take one and fly away. And then with that, they may just hide it. At which point the woodpeckers will be trailing not too far behind, looking to see where the chickadees hid the seeds.
Ah, very good.
Yeah, they watch.
Okay.
Kurt, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. The great Rich Guthrie is our guest today on Vox Pop. Chevy in West Hampton, Mass. You're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I am curious about a bird sound that may not be a bird sound. We were sitting on our porch. We live in a wooded sort of area in Western Mass. There's a stream so it's wet. And at dusk, we have heard what I thought was an owl. So we went and looked it up on the Cornell website to listen. It's not the barred owl who cooks for you. It's not the screech owl. And it sounds, you're going to laugh, but I'm going to do the sound right now.
Oh, I love this.
Woo! And then you wait.
Aha!
And we couldn't match it with any of the sounds that we were looking for on our laptop.
Oh, so good
we
for you.
They said, oh, no, it's not a bird. It's a bear.
No.
And
I thought,
what?
No. No, I like what you did. Your call, your imitation, it was very, very good. I'm going to equate that with the long-eared owl. They do that. They do a single note, a pause, and then that single note sounds just like what you did. Long-eared owl.
Long-eared owl.
Yeah, they're very scarce.
They are.
Oh, and very secretive. And where are you again?
West Hampton.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's good territory
for you. Long-eared owl.
Long-eared owl. Yes. Let me show you.
Okay, Rich is going to show me a picture, which is not going to help you at all, Chevy, but I'll take a look at this and let you know if, in fact, it does have long ears.
Oh, it does.
Well, oh, would you look at that.
And they are very, very secretive. It's one of my favorite owls.
It looks a little like the great horned owl.
It does, but it's smaller.
So it's big.
It's a lot smaller.
It's a lot smaller than a great horned?
Yes,
so how big is this bird?
They're about this big.
Okay, that doesn't help on the radio.
I know, they're this big.
about a foot tall, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, and I should look it up then.
Look it up, and then what they do is they'll scrunch up against the trunk of the tree where they're hiding and make themselves look like a piece of bark. They're so clever.
That's cool.
But that sound, ooh.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
With a long pause in between. And then they go by the name cat owl because their ears make them, and the face makes them look like a cat. And they also have a cat-like call that.
Okay. Have you heard that sound?
Too.
You heard that?
Yeah.
You got it then.
Well, that's very, very good. I'm always glad to hear the presence of long-eared owls. Now, you know, be very careful with them. They're good to have around. And
Well, thanks a lot for that one, and thank you for making the sound effects, Chevy. We appreciate it. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest today, and let's go to Melissa in Kingston. Melissa.
Hi, it's Lissa. How are you?
Oh, hi, Lissa. You're on.
Okay, I've got this. I'll play it for you first.
Aha. Okay.
I heard that when I was out kayaking the other evening, and I wasn't sure if that was a bird. Somebody said it might be a frog.
You're right. I mean, somebody is right.
It's a frog?
It's a frog.
It is a frog.
It's a tree frog. One of the happy sounds of summer. A tree frog. Mm-hmm. And you probably heard it up in a tree, which is, you know, it just adds a little more mystery.
The frogs get up in the tree?
Yep.
I'll be darned. Yep. How high up in the tree?
Well, as high as they want. Until the tree stops.
Do the birds sometimes eat the frogs that go up in the tree?
Probably not. Though, you know, they're not off limits, but they're very cryptically colored. They can blend in with the tree and hide well.
So, Lissa, did you record that and then bring it to us for the program?
Yes, I did.
Gosh, that is so great. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, good tech.
I planned it ahead of time. I was out to go see the Bob Dylan concert.
Ah, Lissa,
we
love you.
Oh, awesome.
And I heard that, and I said, I've got to save this for Rich.
All right.
How was Dylan? Oh, no, that's the long-eared owl.
The music was great. Well, the music was wonderful.
Lissa, you're terrific.
Thanks, Lissa. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. It's 800-348-2551. We get a music review. We get some sound effects. It's
birds and frogs and trees and like.
Let's go to David in Massachusetts. David, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question for you. I was out sitting on my back deck at 7:30 or so after it had rained, and up, you know, maybe 30 feet off the ground in one of my trees, I had a very nice conversation with someone that I couldn't quite see. So if weather permits, and hopefully I will be able to reproduce at least three of what his calls were, he would go, and then.
Oh, wow.
And then.
Oh, wow. Good job. Yeah.
And he and I would just go back and forth with those same three calls. He wouldn't come any closer. Well, and wouldn't get any lower, but he would just, you know, for probably half an hour, he and I went back and forth with that. Well, I was just wondering what that would be.
You did a good job at presenting the song of the wood thrush.
Wow.
And it's one of the most beautiful sounds out there. From the edge of the woods, you can hear them deep in the woods. And the wood thrush, delightful little inconspicuous bird. They're related to our robin and the bluebird. But they're brown with black spots on the breast, and they sing towards dusk. Is there a way of they do have this crepuscular vesper song that they sing?
Crepuscular vesper song. That's impressive.
There you go. That's what they do. That's how good they are. Whoa. So the wood thrush, wonderful sounds. Unfortunately, they've been having a bit of a problem with their population because of they like the thick woods and they're vulnerable to predation. And I have to say, they're one of those that easy prey for outdoor cats. Okay. So I'm going to put a pitch in there that outdoor cats and not good for wood thrushes.
All right, sir. Let's quickly get another call in here before the next break. Jesse and Troy. Jesse, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. A lot of calls about rose-breasted grosbeaks, mm-hmm. and mine is also. I haven't seen one of those in, like, about 20 years, and this year I've seen three.
Mm-hmm.
So just wondering if, is that just a fluke that I haven't been seeing them and now I am, or are their populations increasing for some reason?
I think it's more you than them. They are out there. Here's what happens. The rose-breasted grosbeak is, like the wood thrush, a forest bird, but they're more inclined to be up in the canopy of the forest. And as brightly colored and strikingly patterned as they are, they can be very difficult to see because they're up there amongst all the foliage of the treetops.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very distinctive song. Sounds somewhat like a robin. If you learn it, you'll know that there are more grosbeaks out there than what meets the eye.
Ah.
And the other thing about rose-breasted grosbeaks is that they have this propensity in the spring when they first arrive to show up in backyards, and then they disappear.
Which, do we know why that happens?
No, I don't know. They show up at bird feeders, the lady who had the grosbeaks coming to a hummingbird feeder is one of the few fortunate folks. The rest of them just kind of like disperse into the woods, live a quiet life out there, and then they may or may not come back in the fall on their way south in migration.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. We'll take a quick break here. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. It's the Bird Show, don't you know? We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Interim Healthcare. For 46 years, providing home care for individuals, companions, aides, and nurses, serving the Greater Capital Region, Columbia and Saratoga Counties, and Glens Falls. InterimHealthcare.com. Lathrop Retirement Communities. Communities of older adults devoted to social responsibility and personal and intellectual enrichment, Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts. Lathrop.kendall.org. Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, for 14 years, offering plant, spirit medicine, and energy clearing for health, body, mind, and spirit. CLARePearson.net. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. And Sheehy Opticians, Albany, providing eye exams and eyeglasses, including Bevel, Lafon, and Pro Design, progressive lenses from Verilux and Nikon, and Maui Jim, Costa, and Ray-Ban sunglasses. SHEHYOpticians.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you and Rich Guthrie. Our number is 800-348-2551. I understand, Rich, there were a couple of events that we forgot all about.
I did, yes. Here's a couple. I just want to bring, if you're in the Schoharie County, Montgomery County area, you might be interested in joining David Harrison, who's an excellent field trip leader.
Yeah.
That's on July 1st at 7 o'clock in the morning. Contact the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club at hmbc.net, hudsonmohawkbirdclub.net. And for information about that, contact David Harrison. And then on the east side of the Hudson River, Lake Taconic, The Alan DeVoe Bird Club will be having a field trip coming up on July 8th. That's a Saturday. Mm. And again, they ask you to contact them at Alan DeVoe Bird Club, all spelled out, D-E-V-O-E, birdclub.org, about the field trip to Lake Taconic on July 8th. And then I might mention, too, that about binoculars, a good place to go is to hands-on try them out, road test a pair of binoculars. Yeah. And a place like Wild Birds Unlimited up there in Saratoga Springs mm-hmm. is a good place to try on a pair of these shoes okay. and see if they fit well.
Fair enough. This one came in actually not even via email. This is from one of the Lucases in our newsroom. It could be Lucas Willard. It could be Dave Lucas. They're both inquisitive. I don't know who it really
Maybe
is.
Maybe by carrier pigeon.
All right. So this is the question. From Lucas in Albany, very close to here.
Mm-hmm.
Rich, because of the warmer winter, did you see any unusual birds in the Northeast this year?
Actually, the most unusual bird in the winter in the Northeast was one that came down from the Arctic, that very seldom leaves the Arctic, and that was that Ross's gull, as in the Ross ice shelf.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, the same sort of connection. The Ross's gull that came down and was at Tupper Lake in the Adirondacks for a good part of the winter.
Right.
A delightful bird. And aside from that, you know, this is right now we're in what's the doldrums of the summer. This is when birds are quieting down. They're busy raising their family that they work so hard to develop over the migrate back from the South America, and they build up their territory, build a nest, lay eggs, raise them. Now they're into that, and they'll be going into their annual molt. Most of them will lose their feathers and regain a whole new supply of feathers. But now is a time when they're out there doing that. So, and it's also when young birds begin to wander. Some of them just don't get the roadmap right. And now's a fun time to look for these wanderers from the west and from the south and from the north and from over in Europe or Asia or Africa. Watch for the summer birds.
Terrific. Our guest is Rich Guthrie. We go to Jim in Schenectady. Jim, you're on.
Hi, I just had a quick question about a bird that has a weird sound. My wife and I go out every night to go for a walk in our neighborhood, and when the sun starts to set in the neighborhood, these birds start talking to each other, and they have the sound that sounds like whack, 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 whack. And they're like maybe, I don't know, two or three houses apart, and they're going back and forth talking to each other. And I just wanted to know, what is that species of bird that makes this kind of like a, almost like a quacking sound, but it's like a whack, whack, whack type sound? Would you know?
I'm working on it.
Duck?
Right away.
No, they're high up in the tree. They're like, I know they're like way up in the trees. I mean, there's a lot of maples, a lot of sugar maples, a lot of silver maples, and they're like four or five houses apart when they're talking to each other. And then there's like a whole bunch of them that just make this serenade. But yet where I live, I don't see or hear any of them.
Now,
so it's only like when we walk to the next neighborhood where there's a lot more trees and more dense that we're hearing all this conversation going on, and it's really loud in that neighborhood.
I hear what you're saying. I'm going to say it's a little early for it yet, but it sounds like it might be an insect. The katydid will make a sound like that. But it's a little early for them to start sounding, but they do that in the evening. And it's a nice little debate that they have. They say, katydid, katydidn't.
So there's no bird that's close to that?
Some birds will do a goodnight call. Mm. And again, the thrushes do that, but they're more like to be in a dense woodlot than a city urban setting. Some of the other birds have goodnight calls, but that they share back and forth, but then they dummy up in a big hurry.
Okay.
You know, it's like.
So,
you
what
know,
did you call it? What was it, the insect?
Katydid. It's a type of a leafhopper, grasshopper, a big green insect that lives in the trees, high up in the trees. So you'll hear them coming, and they do that at night.
All right, Jim, thank you so much. 800-348-2551, the number. We go to Dave in Albany. Dave, hello. Hello, Dave.
Well, you can come in again, but this is for when you're working.
When I'm working.
Okay, that's it. I apologize. A little cinema verite there into Dave's world.
Conversation going on there.
All right, well, I'm sorry you waited so long, Dave. Robert in Wineskill. Robert, you're on.
Oh, great. I was in my backyard. I've got a overgrown pond, overgrown with Phragmites.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across a bird, I would say a little bit larger than a duck. Orange legs, pretty big beak.
Yep.
And I never saw it before. I mean, when I was a kid, all we had were robins and crows. And now the diversity of wildlife is incredible. But But anyway, in my search to find this, what this bird might be, I came across a gallinule. And I thought, well, that's pretty close, but I wasn't sure. But I disturbed it. It took off. And then a few days later, I was down again and the second time, and it took off again. And then I haven't seen it since. But it intrigued me that, you know, these gallinules, I'm almost certain that's what I saw. And I've never seen one before. Did I see a gallinule?
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
How can you be so sure?
Because right off the bat, well, two things you said that said not gallinule, but green heron. The orange legs, spot on for green heron. That's what they show when they're leaving. And then a gallinule.
It was about the size of a duck, though.
Yeah, this is right.
Green heron.
No, this is the green heron might better be called the little green heron because they are tiny little herons. They're not very big at all. And that would be duck size. They have that, just as you described, the long beak and the long orange legs. The gallinule.
Wow.
The gallinule has a very stubby beak. It's more like a chicken beak and not orange legs. And they're not inclined to fly away. They're more likely to swim away and duck into the reeds and hide.
Okay.
So I'm money's on a green heron.
Green
Check
heron,
it out.
Yep. Very rare?
Great.
No, they're not rare.
Great.
They're not rare. They're delightful little guys. They're crayfish eaters, frog eaters. And they live on the edge of the ponds and nest in trees nearby. So good
Terrific.
Job.
Robert, thanks a lot for that one. 800-348-2551, the number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Kathy in Easton. Kathy, you're on.
Hi. While listening to your program, as I was driving on Vly Summit Road in the town of Easton in Washington County, in the middle of the road was a peacock.
Oh, okay.
A peacock. Long, beautiful neck, blue, beautiful blue, and the big tail hanging behind it.
Yep.
And it was just walking right in the middle of the road.
Well, that's
and
what they do.
Eventually a car came, scared it. I had no idea peacocks were common to this area.
Oh, they're not at all. That's somebody's pet.
Really?
Yeah, it's somebody's, somebody's backyard pet.
Where are they common?
India. And Florida, you know, people, they're a gorgeous bird and people.
Oh, it's beautiful. Huh?
Much like the Bob White, people will get a hold of them online. They'll buy peacock eggs, hatch them out, raise them.
And it's legal to do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. It's in between. There's farmlands on either side of the road.
Yep.
It could be a farmer, but is it in danger? Should I have stopped and tried to help it or something?
No, there's probably not much you could do
home?
About it. Presumably.
Wow.
Yeah. The peacock.
Wow.
I know Vly Summit Road very well. It's a lovely stretch of Washington County. And I suspect it's somebody's backyard bird that'll find its way home before too long.
Well, that's terrific. Kathy, thanks a lot.
Well, that's...
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Thank you.
You're right,
one.
Kathy. That was great.
So the bird, once it is a pet, it knows to go home.
Well, maybe, maybe not. It's up to the person who raised the bird assumes that responsibility to care for the bird. Not all birds are that have that great homing instinct that they know to return to the farmyard or the pen or the coop or the cote.
A peacock doesn't fly, right?
Oh, yeah, they fly.
They do?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just a lot of lumbering to get them in the air, but they do.
Very interesting. Let's go back to line number 5. And go to John in Albany. John, you're on.
Yes, I wonder if Rich could identify some ducks for me. They're dabbling along the shore of the Postenkill in downtown Troy, right below the 3rd Street Bridge. They're almost all white back or very light tan and dark brown heads.
White back, dark brown heads.
Domestic mallards. Again, they are, it sounds to me like a variety, a domestic variety of the mallard duck. Again, raised artificially in somebody's backyard and released in a pond. That happens quite often. People get a hold of duck eggs. They raise them. They can't keep them, and they bring them to a park and drop them off.
And again, will they be okay?
Probably not. You know, park ducks in winter don't do well. We learned that in Saratoga Springs, where, you know, they had the ducks there through the summer. And then in wintertime, they become, the ponds begin to freeze, and the ducks do not have an instinctive migratory pattern to them. So they it creates a great deal of angst to people. In the barnyard, where they have a coop that they can go to to get out of the winter at night, then that's fine. But not so much in a public park.
All right, let's go over to Nina in East Hoosick, New York. Nina, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hey, this is my lucky day that Rich is on after we had a little gardening unexpected thing happen. So my handyman was removing some invasive vines from a fence I have, and he came inside and he said, oh, there's a bird's nest there with three blue robin's eggs in it. So what's happened is, and the thing that I'm concerned about, Rich, and need your advice on, is that some of the shelter over the nest has been removed, inadvertently, of course. So it gets more sun, I see. Yeah, I'm concerned about that. And I'm wondering what we should do. Should we try and put, you know, some vine shapes, some other vines over it, or is that important or not? It does get a fair amount of sun, but it still has some shade.
Okay.
I would do nothing. The mama bird and papa bird on some species will take good care of the eggs, even though once a bird lays the eggs, their instincts change and they become very attached to the site. If it's a disturbance before the eggs are laid, they might go off and try finding someplace else. But once they're on eggs...
It's the sun part, Rich, that I'm concerned about. How much sun those eggs and those young chicks are going to get.
Well, mama will take care of that. They'll stand over the eggs or the hatchlings and shield them from the sun and the rain as appropriate. So the best bet in a situation like that is to let it be and let nature take its course in there.
Well, Nina, thank you very much for the call. And over to Bill in Saratoga. Bill.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm going to make my comment and then hang up because I am driving.
Okay.
But, to confirm, I also saw the Bob White in Saratoga Springs last week. It was on my front porch. And first I heard it in the morning and then walked around the house, saw it. And then the next day I saw it in the, or I heard it, in the neighborhood over by Lake Avenue Elementary School. So I just wanted to make that comment, and I'm going to hang up and listen to the discussion on the radio.
Thanks, Bill.
Great. Yeah, well, there you go. Bob White's very vocal, and they're very distinctive sound. You can't mistake it. They have that Bob White.
Yep.
And bingo. Sounds like somebody released a couple of Bob Whites in Saratoga Springs. Good luck to them.
All right. Matthew in Carthage, New York. Matthew, you're on.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a quick question. In the evening time, right as dusk ends and the dark is coming, if I'm standing outside in my yard, I hear this bird. It almost sounds like it's feels like they're flying around the air in a big area, and I have it's all open field where I live, and they make this weird sound.
Oh, good. All right. All right.
It's a curly from the
and
Three Stooges
wife,
bird.
It does sound like a little spaceship landing, too.
So what is it?
Yeah, and me and my wife are always like, what is that bird?
Good for you. Good imitation.
What is it?
It's a snipe.
A snipe?
A snipe, which is related. Yeah, it's a shorebird. It's a sandpiper gone to the marsh in the woods. And that's a perfect imitation of their courtship dance, which is an aerial dance. They'll fly up in the air.
Okay.
And they'll fly down with this. It sounds like a flying saucer landing. And
yeah.
If you've ever heard a flying saucer landing.
Yeah, good job. I like to hear about that.
Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot, Matthew. We appreciate. Oops, sorry, man. We lost you there.
Oh, but great job, Matthew. Thanks.
Yeah, we're just about out of time. You have anything important you want to say in the last 1 minute of the program?
Important? Me?
Yeah. Well, come on.
All right, we're looking forward to the eclipse out west this
summer.
Okay,
that's in August.
You'll be on August
again next month, I assume.
No.
You're not on in July?
I'll be in South Carolina next month.
What are you doing in South Carolina?
Family. Life is good. But but the eclipse, I'm going to be watching for this because I've never witnessed it. But Bob Berman and folks who have seen a total eclipse say that everything goes quiet. Birds and animals think it's nighttime.
Yeah, and Berman is quite convinced that you'll weep.
Okay.
He's a grown-ups will weep.
Okay.
So right. What I suggest you do is you get a selfie, we'll put it on YouTube.
I'll bring you tissues.
Guthrie weeping coming up. Well, Rich, thanks a lot for being here, old friend, and have a great time in down south.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be on before you go to Idaho?
Negatory.
Really?
Right.
So I'll see you at the end of the summer.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thank you very much. Support comes from Studio Herbage, a contemporary floral design studio in historic downtown Johnstown, New York. Local and long-distance delivery, studioherbageflorist.com. ClipCentric Albany, a local video services division of ClipCentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV, albany.clipcentric.com. Bassett Healthcare, providing information on partial knee replacement at educational seminars across central New York. Say no to kneepain.com for dates and locations. And Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, presenting the Klezmer and Kosher Festival with food, music, brew, and more. July 6th at Schmaltz Brewery, Clifton Park, New York. SaratogaJewishCulturalFestival.org for details. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie for being here. Thank you for listening, and thank you for the great calls and so many bird calls today for us to identify. That was a lot of fun. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Carol Lapani. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, gardening. Oh, boy, our friends will be here to answer your questions about flowers and vegetables and grubs and shrubs and whatnot. Right now, though, stand by for news.